Hello and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where the three amigos here are going to throw a little extra butter on your movie-going experience. This week, we're going to review the new Jennifer Lawrence raunchy comedy, No Hard Feelings. And I used a high-pitched tone on purpose. We'll cover that a little bit later. But we are going to be doing our spoiler review in segment number three regarding the Jennifer Lawrence new movie, No Hard Feelings. And with me, as always, is Benny Hamlin and JTE. Gents, how we doing this morning?
Go ahead, Benny. Start it off.
I'm pretty good, man. Feeling a little dirty after watching this movie, but nothing wrong with that. Ready to get into it. This is right in my wheelhouse.
I, on our hand, I feel clean, like a newborn baby brought into the world of raunchy comedy once again. I'm glad to see a movie like this. You know, this is a big film like The Flash. But remember I was talking about earlier counter-programming when I saw the film the other last week. What's it called?
Asteroid City?
No, not Asteroid City. The one with the love story about the now I can't remember the name. Oh, it was a limited release, and it's like Best Picture nominee. Oh, with the
Best People Talking.
Yes, she moves from Korea to America. Oh, I'm so crappy. I can't believe I forgot this.
Well, speaking of the Flash, let's talk box office numbers, because the Flash tanked this weekend. The Flash got beat by two movies that have already come out before The Flash came out. The Flash had a 74% drop and fell from a lackluster opening weekend to just $15.3 million this past weekend at the box office. You have to anticipate that DC is reeling right now. So here's your top 10 for the box office. And then these two gents, me being the third gent, will break down our thoughts on this. JT, did you find the name of this movie?
Yeah, Past Lives.
There it is.
That's the one. I talked about it. I don't know why. I'm an idiot.
Well, the good that gave me the Tommy Boy feels right there when he's like, I was checking the specs on the rotary girl. I'm retarded.
Yeah, pretty much. God,
box office breakdown. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse in its fourth week was the number one box office draw this weekend with $19.3 million. Elemental coming in second place, $18.5 million. Small little charge, maybe. The Flash, as previously mentioned, shit the bed and came in at number three, $15.3 million. Number four is No Hard Feelings, the movie we'll be discussing today. Number five, Transformers Rise of the Beasts, still doing just okay domestically, but of course, these movies do gangbusters worldwide, and they're already at $350 million worldwide. Number six, Wes Anderson's Asteroid City, coming in with $9 million. You have to anticipate that he's probably thrilled by that outcome. Little Mermaid holding strong at number seven, $8 million. Guardians of the Galaxy, which I'm sure will be released on streaming services in the next week, still putting up numbers in the box office with $3.5 million, $827 million worldwide for this movie. Marvel needed that win. And rounding it out, we have The Blackening at number nine and The Boogeyman. The Boogeyman still in the top 10. Not too shabby. So the big story here has got to be The Flash, right? I mean, we talked in great length last week how even their number one debut last week at $60 million was still a disappointment. Where they are worldwide, and they're not doing great worldwide, they haven't even made back their original budget yet, let alone the extra $100 million you tack on for marketing, right? So The Flash, DC in trouble. I'm going to toss it over to Benny. What's your thoughts given this box office totals?
It's very fascinating to me simply because this is not a bad movie. The severe drop in box office, it is not just this movie. It is an overall referendum on DC. And if you go back and you look at the DC movies that have been released, it has been like an escalation of severe second weekend drops. Like even going all the way back to like Batman v Superman, this has been an epidemic with the DCEU movies of this like plus 65% drop off in the second week. And especially the last two, like if you look at Black Adam, Shazam 2, and The Flash, They are all, I think, have over a 68% drop in their second week. And just the sheer no movement on the needle for Shazam 2 and The Flash. I don't think it's a referendum on superhero movies, because you see Guardians, you know, closing in on $1 billion. You see Into the Spider-Verse making all the money in the Spider-Verse. This is people saying, okay, we're done with the DCEU. Whether that's Ezra Miller or whether the fact that they know that this universe is a lame duck universe at this point, which I think is probably really what it is. People are just saying no, they're done with the DCEU. And I think this is going to be very troubled waters going into Blue Beetle, because this is not a well-known character. It doesn't have a built-in mainstream fan base. Maybe Jason Momoa has the star power to draw people into Aquaman. But I don't think either of these movies are setting pretty after what we've seen over the last few DCEU movies.
How about you, JT? What's your thoughts here?
Man, this is like, I want all the data that WB has on The Flash. And I feel like this would be, I want all the data, all the social media data. I want all the tracking, because I just felt like this movie was primed to be a big hit. I the hype, the word of mouth before it came out. And then the cinema score was a B, which is pretty bad. When it comes to these exit polls, usually you want to get an A minus, B plus. Anything under a B or less is not good. That is not a good cinema score. I know everyone says B is good, it's passing, but you want to get an A minus to an A when you do a cinema score. So I guess it just, the people did not connect with this film for one way or another. I'm not sure why. Maybe the tone. I did mention in my review, I felt the tonal shifts were a little bit off. Michael Keaton, I was so happy to see him back. Again, maybe that's a generational thing. Maybe people just weren't as excited. If it was Christian Bale, maybe people would have been more excited. Maybe it would have done better. Michael Keaton maybe doesn't have the pull like it universally like it does for all three of us. We could not wait to see Keaton. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, it's just really disappointing. But at the same time, it's the end of the Snyderverse. It's the end of whatever these movies are. These movies are stuck in this weird limbo where they're not really adding to the series going forward. But during the canon, they have to use them. Like, they can't just write off. It's one thing you write off Batgirl when it's not finished and it's supposed to be a streaming movie. It's another thing when you can't write off a $1 billion sequel to a $1 billion film with Aquaman. Yeah, I'm really just scratching my head. I can't wait. There just needs to be like a whole documentary about the DECU and Zack Snyder and James. I mean, there's going to be an amazing documentary in like 10, 15 years from now about the whole DCEU and how it went, the ups and the downs, the Whedon of it all, the Justice League cut. Like, it's going to be fascinating. Or there's going to be at least, there probably is a few books already.
I agree 100%. I think that this is going to make it very interesting. This is going to be the fire fest of superhero movies, right? This documentary that's going to come out. And I'm with you guys. If I'm a WB executive, I have to be scratching my head and go, was it a good idea to allow James Gunn to announce? Because, you know, that he is going to be resetting this universe. It would have been one thing to announce that he was the new co-CEO of the DC universe. It's another thing to have announced that everything that is currently being shown on screen is going away and doesn't matter in the continuity of these movies. For me, if Marvel came out and said that, I really don't have a ton of reason to continue to go to the theaters, because you go to the Marvel theaters to see the superheroes, but also there's a small continuation of the story, of the narrative that keeps pushing forward. DC doesn't have that now. And if I'm a Warner Brothers executive, I'm going, that was probably a really bad idea to allow James Gunn to tweet that, because they have lost a fortune. Benny, I think you pointed it out. Black Adam, Shazam, they did not turn profits. By the looks of it right now, The Flash has got a very uphill battle. And I don't think the guy's got the legs to be able to sprint to that finish line. I know I'm using a lot of running puns right now, but I'm doing it. It's fascinating to me, just this downward trajectory that the DC has had. And arguably, and this is just my own opinion, there has not been a very good movie in the DC stable in the last 5 years. I'll take with the exception of the Snyderverse, but that's not exactly a theatrically released movie, right?
Well, is Aquaman, you don't like Aquaman.
I did not like Aquaman.
Yeah. See, I loved Aquaman.
I know you did.
let me ask you guys this question. They already went and hired Annie Muschietti to direct the next Batman movie. Does this box office return the fact? I mean, is this going to be like a Last Jedi kind of thing where people are like so turned off by this Flash movie that James Gunn's going to look at Muschietti and be like, maybe we should have waited to announce that you're the director of the, what is it, The Brave and the Bold or something like that, the Batman movie?
Reverse that.
Reverse that. Okay, perfect. The Bold and the Brave. Sounds like a soap opera. Yeah, so do you guys think he's still going to be the director for this movie, or do you think this huge, colossal bomb is going to affect that?
That's an interesting question. I think he'll stick with it just because I don't think The Flash is a terrible movie. I don't think what is happening to The Flash is a direct correlation to what it is. I think people were going in maybe with the wrong preconception, and I think the overall status of the DCEU is impacting it more than the film itself. And plus, James Gunn has a history of kind of being screwed over by studios. And so I think he's going to be a little reluctant to boot him out over essentially what's an okay movie.
Well, I will say this, though. There are people online, friends of ours, who hate the movie.
Yeah.
My buddy Lon Harris, who was one of our first guests, hated it. Has been just like, this movie's garbage. No wonder it's bombing. So there is a small group out there who do not like this movie at all. So, and I'm surprised by that because I thought, even if you didn't like it, I thought it was entertaining enough as a popcorn movie that you could still, you know, if you don't love it, you don't really like it too much, you guys still not have a bad time with it. But what was shocking to me is to see the just straight up negative takes and reviews of this movie where people are like, I couldn't stand it. I couldn't wait for it to be over. Just get me out of the theater. So to me, that's the one where I feel like James Gunn might hear that stuff and be like, and again, a B cinema score, that's pretty bad. And nowadays, they need to stop announcing movies, like you're saying, Moose. Stop announcing 5-6 movies ahead of time. Maybe do one or two at a time and make sure you have the right director and the right story. You know, Marvel has done this. For the most part, Marvel had to switch things here and there, but they've done a pretty good job. But DC, they announced, what, a Green Lantern TV show. They announced a Cyborg movie. They announced so many movies that never came to fruition. I don't know why they would go and just announce a whole nother slate instead of just being like, you know what, we're going to take our time.
I do think that Muschietti is going to stick around in the new DC universe. And here's why. He's a director that had a lot of studio interference, change of CEOs. There was a lot of hands in the Flash movie. And he was constantly given new direction. You got to include this person. You got to include this person. Hey, we're going to throw Clooney in at the end. Like, there was a lot that he had to be able to juggle. And then he still put out a decent movie. And I think somebody like James Gunn as your next boss is going to recognize that. He's a director himself. And to Benny's point, he's a director that's had controversy, that's been fired from a major studio before, that's been accused of, you know, that's accused studios of too much interference in a director's artistic, you know, vision. And so Muschietti, unfortunately, was kind of, his movie was in production for 7 years. I think Gunn is going to give him an opportunity to direct a Batman movie without too much interference. I think it's still got to be Gunn's story. It's still going to need to be some continuity into this new universe. However, he is going to have far less interactions and far less. Every Monday, I'm sure Muschietti had an inbox full of notes that he had to include in the Flash movie. So I personally think that Muschietti will stick around. I think Gunn recognizes the hard work and effort that he put into this and how much shit he had to deal with over the 7-year process of The Flash becoming a reality of a movie. But to wrap out the box office conversation, I will say, I mean, kudos to Guardians of the Galaxy. I really do. I enjoyed that movie. That is a good quality Marvel movie. That's a nice cap to a nice series of Marvel characters that have had a good run over the last 10 years. So I'm thrilled to see that Guardians is doing so well. I'm thrilled to see the Little Mermaid is starting to pick up some steam because it wasn't the worst of the Disney adaptations. It really wasn't. And it was a good movie. I'm anxious to see the Asteroid City. I like Wes Anderson movies, much like you, JTE. Like his last couple, like The French Connection, I couldn't even get through. I fell asleep twice watching that movie and was like, forget about it. But Asteroid City looks like it's quirky enough that maybe I'm going to enjoy, be able to shut off my brain and just enjoy some quirky dialogue. But that's got to be a win for him. $9 million for a movie that was probably made for six. But any final thoughts, guys, on this box office?
Not really. I think everything, The Flash, like you said, is the biggest deal. Transformers going to make it globally. I don't think it's a runaway hit. My hope is, even though it doesn't make a crap load of money, spoilers for Rise of the Beast if you haven't seen it, there's a big, you know, not even after credit scene, but the last scene introduces another universe that could combine with this Transformers universe. And I'm hoping that's enough to give it another chance, another sequel, because me and Benny definitely really enjoyed Rise of the Beast when it came to being a Transformers movie. And I know you didn't love it, but you were at least open to it. So everything else kind of, you know, on par with what I expected. I'm surprised Guardians is not going to hit a billion. I don't think it's going to make it there where it's at right now. I think I would have bet before the summer that would have been a $1 billion franchise. It's the final Guardians film. So I think, you know, while that's a huge hit, no one's crying over there at Marvel. But at the same time, it would have been nice if they would have got to a billion.
I think one thing we're seeing is the box office recovers after the pandemic is studios are going to have to rethink what they're budgeting movies at. Mm. Even movies that are being successful, if they're coming out with these $200 budgets, which were, you know, fairly standard 2018, 2019, before everything shut down, movies are not making the money back like they used to. Like, there are a lot of movies that are coming out and they're making these $50 million opening weekends, and then they're hanging around in like chunks of $10 million, which is great, you know, if you're making a movie for $60 million. But if you're coming out with a movie that's $200-300 million in budget, you're going to lose money. They're going to have to rethink how much they are putting into these movies as things goes forward if the box office doesn't change. I mean, there's a new pattern out here with what people are going out to the theater to see and how they're seeing it, and they're going to have to adjust to that, or they're going to keep losing money.
Well, speaking of superhero fatigue, our next story is right back to Deadpool 3. And a little bit of the rumor mill going out there right now that a certain director, former Batman, Ben Affleck, may be returning to the Daredevil costume this time around in Deadpool 3. Your guys' thoughts? I mean, I know it's all rumor and conjecture, and it's fun to have these conversations about, oh, is he going to return? Is he not going to return? The dude just returned as Batman in The Flash. Do you see him lacing up the red leather to return as Daredevil in Deadpool 3?
To me, this is a no-win situation, because if it's not true, I'm going to be disappointed when I go watch Deadpool 3 because I want Ben Affleck to be there in that Daredevil costume. But if it is true, then I'm also a little disappointed because I would rather have seen that happen in the movie without it hearing the rumors or it being a possibility, because I would have never expected that to happen. Much like when we saw Flash, there was a huge cameo in there. I think that was, I never would have imagined it would have been in there. I think that Daredevil would have been just like that for Deadpool 3. I never would have imagined Affleck as Daredevil. Like, maybe too bad him and Garner, you know, they're still friends. Maybe she could show up as Elektra. Who knows who else they could. And I also think to myself, if they're pulling back to grab him, who else could pop up in this thing?
Sure.
Could we see Nicolas Cage as Ghost Rider?
Wesley Snipes as Blade?
Wesley Snipes as Blade. So it opens the door to a lot of fun possibilities. Listen, we're on social media. I go on a lot of the websites when there's like movie news going around. I wish they would do a better job of just being like, you know what? This is a great story, but maybe let's just hold on to this and hopefully it could be something of a surprise. I give Flash credit for keeping a lot of their surprises, you know, under whatever, locked doors, sealed envelopes, whatever you want to say. I'm surprised a lot of those things didn't leak out. So I'm hoping whatever Deadpool 3 has up its sleeve, they're able to keep it until the actual opening weekend, and we can have some actual surprises in that theater.
I would say I'm a little apprehensive about it, because the more people they announce are going to be in this movie, the more it starts to sound like a cameo, like, you know, fan service fest as opposed to an actual Deadpool movie. I think Deadpool, like, one, you know, they're dealing with a small number of characters for a superhero movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think two is quite as good as Deadpool one. And they started pulling in more characters. And now that they have access to pretty much the entire Marvel catalog, except for Spider-Man, I'm a little leery when they start announcing, like, okay, we're just going to shove everything into this movie, because traditionally that doesn't work. You know, give me Wolverine, you know, and Deadpool on a buddy cop adventure, like a 48 hours with those two, and I would be thrilled. I don't think you need to try to shove 59 people in there, but if Ben Affleck's in there, that's fine. It'll be a fun tongue-in-cheek thing. I just hope it doesn't distract from the overall movie.
I don't think that there's a snowball's chance in hell that Affleck is going to show up in Marvel movie as Daredevil. I'm a defender. There's a director's cut of the Daredevil movie, which is a far, far superior to the theatrical cut of this movie. And it is actually a good movie. However, not a lot of people know that, because there is such a shit cloud stink that surrounds the theatrical cut of the Daredevil movie that I don't think people give a crap about him showing up as Daredevil.
I would argue, guys, though, it's a better movie, maybe not a good movie.
There we go. So, but I'm kind of with you guys. Like, it would be fun to see Affleck do that, but the guy just played Batman. Like, I'm sure he wants to direct, you know, he wanted a Batman movie. And I think that was, personally, I think that was a huge misstep by DC to not allow Ben Affleck. Ben Affleck has really, his filmography that he's directed, he's got one that's just fine. The rest of them are superb movies. But yeah, I don't think for a minute that he's going to show up. We already know that Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson are going to be showing up, because they're part of the TVA, and Deadpool's going to be, you know, breaking timelines, and he's going to be jumping into universes. That's enough. Just keep those two. You can make funny references to things. I mean, that, to Benny's point, like, that was what was so great about the first movie. And even the second, they broadened it a little bit in the second, but the second was still like the small little cameo in the second one where he's like, you think after the first movie, the studio would throw us a bone with more X-Men? And then they just briefly show all of them and they close the door. Like, that's all you need in these Deadpool movies for it to be funny and for it to work.
I want them to go deep cut bad movies. Show me Josh Brolin as Jonah Hex. Bring back Shaq as Steel. I guess some DC characters in there. Like, I say, just go for the worst comic movies that were ever made and put all those people back in it. Give me Howard the Duck. Give me the 80s Howard the Duck. I want it.
I want to see Deadpool with his sword through Howard the Duck and just roasting him over the fire. Benny is one of the few.
His ass.
I know Benny is a huge defender of Howard the Duck. Well, speaking of Deadpool 3, on that same topic, James Mangold, director of Logan, came out and did say that he was a little sad and kind of a little upset that the Wolverine character played by Hugh Jackman was going to be returning for Deadpool 3. He had made some comments that he really would have liked to have seen Hugh Jackman hang up the claws and for Logan to be the last entry. Now, I get that as a director, because Logan is a masterpiece. I don't know about you guys, but that movie is maybe one of the best superhero movies out there. And it doesn't feel too much like a superhero movie. I mean, it does at times, because he's still running around with claws, killing people, but it is so much more than just a movie, and the send off to it is beautiful. However, you see, I know you guys see the banter between and the relationship that Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds has, right? If you're Hugh Jackman, you're, and Ryan Reynolds is like, dude, you want to come be in my Deadpool 3 movie in the MCU? You have to take that offer, right? What are your guys' thoughts on this?
Listen, I get where James Mangold's coming from. Logan was my favorite film the year it came out. Love that film. I could not think of a better ending for that character. I had given up and, you know, I had made peace with it. I would never see another Hugh Jackman Wolverine movie. It was very sad, but, you know, I let it go because it had such a great finale. So when I heard about this, I had a little mixed feelings at first. I was like, you know what? Do we want to, you know, step on that amazing film that James Mangold did and did a perfect ending for him? But here's the thing, guys. I need Secret Invasion to happen, or Secret War. And I need to see Hugh Jackman alongside all my Marvel comic heroes. Him, like, this is the last piece. Every time Hugh Jackman did interviews back when he was doing the Fox films, he would always say, man, I wish I could jump into MCU. I wish I could fight the Hulk so bad. Because, you know, Wolverine and the Hulk have such a great history. And I'm just hoping this is just a stepping stone. If Deadpool 3 gives me Hugh Jackman in Secret War, it's all gravy. I'm okay with it. But I need, to me, it's just a stepping stone for him to play the MCU one final time. That will be even maybe better than Logan, to see him in an Avengers film. Oh my God, I need it.
Hugh Jackman is going to do what JTE is hoping for, and he's just, okay, we're going to keep driving along with Wolverine, and I'm going to be the Wolverine in the MCU proper from here on out. Great. That's fine. You can be old man Logan there. Don't think that's what's going to happen. I think he's just showing up in Deadpool 3, and I do think it's a waste of the character, you know. It was like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. You had the perfect ending at the end of Crusade, and now you're chasing that ending. You've been chasing that ending in that franchise for 30 years now, when you already had the perfect ending. And I think that's what they're going to end up doing with the character, with Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, is chasing this perfect ending that they're never going to get. So I kind of agree with James Mangold. I think you should have let the character lie, bring in the new Wolverine, and let him be who he's going to be. But in the end, I'm never going to fault someone for making money. If somebody came and offered me $20 million to put on some spandex, you know, if you got the 5X spandex, I'm right there in it.
I'll disagree with Benny on one little thing. I believe because this movie is going to be such a tonal difference from what Logan was. Logan is a hard R, gritty drama with some, you know, superhero action on a very ground level. This is going to feel like, I think Deadpool 3 is going to be like a spoof film almost. It's going to be making fun of the MCU. It's going to be making fun of Fox and Sony. And I just feel like it's going to be such a different tone and vibe that I'm not seeing it as like a continuation of that character. It's just we're pulling this character out of some multiverse in order to have some fun with Deadpool. So I think it'll be, because it's going to be such a tonal different film, I think it won't bother me as much.
I think Deadpool is going to finally make it to the MCU reality, Earth 616. And he's going to think he sees Logan, and he's going to turn him around, and it's going to be Daniel Radcliffe as Wolverine.
Please, God, no.
Well, folks, we're going to take a commercial break. We have a special guest for our spoiler segment, the one and only Bethany Deacon. She's going to be talking the new Jennifer Lawrence movie, No Hard Feelings, with us. But for segment number two, we three are going to be discussing our favorite raunchy comedies. Stick around. On to the commercial.
Betty Lou Perkins never made much of an impression until she confessed to a murder she didn't commit.
I'm guilty.
Now she's never been in this much trouble.
My whole life flashed before my eyes, so I pulled the trigger.
I want to believe him. I really do.
And she's never had this much fun.
That's Betty Lou Perkins? Hell, I don't go to the library enough.
The gun in Betty Lou's handbag.
Barry Manilow, Debbie Boone, this guy deserved to be shot.
Rated PG-13, starts Friday, August 21st.
The Star Wars trilogy is back on the big screen, and each planet is celebrating in a different way. On Earth, people are playing Feel the Force at Taco Bell. Press the game piece to magically reveal if you've instantly won cash, one of millions of prizes, or a special edition Hummer. See the trilogy, Feel the Force. Play the game at Taco Bell.
Are you sure this is the right theater?
I'm not even sure it's the right planet.
Welcome back, folks. And this is our favorite segment always, which is the extra butter, the extra calories that we're going to give you with our favorites. We're going to talk about raunchy comedies because, well, let's face it, No Hard Feelings was pretty raunchy in some segments. We'll get to that in our next spoiler with the great Bethany Deacon. However, we are going to talk about our favorite raunchy comedies. Now, I cannot lead this off. JTE, you cannot lead this off.
Okay.
Our very own Benny Hamlin has to be the one to lead us off with his. Just Benny, give us your top three raunchy comedies, bud.
Yes. I grew up in a household that had no limitations on what you could watch. Same. So I grew up with the hard R comedy. You know, like other kids were watching the Smurfs. I was watching the Porky's. You know, it's just the way that things, it's just the way that things happen. So when you're going to raunchy comedies, the golden age of raunchy comedies, late 70s to mid 80s, that's your sweet range. That's where all the gems are. So there are three that I encourage everyone to go out and find if you are a fan of this kind of movie. Number one, I guarantee none of you have ever heard of this movie, 1984's Up the Creek, starring Tim Matheson, Dan Monahan, a.k.a. Pee-wee from the Porky's trilogy, and Flounder from Animal House. It has some of the biggest characters from the biggest raunchy comedies of all time in one movie. And it is the staple of 80s. There's a big race. There are douchey fraternity guys. There are naked women for no apparent reason. There's stuff exploding for no apparent reason. It is the epitome of the raunchy comedy.
Then I'm looking this up right now.
Yes.
I only recognize one name in this cast. That's Tim Matheson.
I'm telling you, man, you have to see this movie if you're a fan of these kind of movies.
Okay.
Like I said, this is for hidden gems, man. You probably never see it. You can probably find it for free on YouTube. I know you can find it free on one of the Roku's channels. And then, of course, we go to the trilogy itself, Porky's, the thing that launched the dirty high school comedy. All of them have been chasing that trilogy since 1981 when the first one came out in the U.S. And if you've never seen it, you have to see it. It's foundational. If you're a 13-year-old listening to this, Porky's, it's foundational for your growth, for your emotional well-being. Go and watch this film. And the third, the bronze medalist, sorry for my stuttering there, Oscar winner Tom Hanks in his most iconic role, Bachelor Party.
Bachelor Party.
It is insane. Like, there are people sneaking a horse in, dressed as a horse, into this party. There's literally a piano full of pills. This was the 80s epitome. Like, if you went into a Walmart in the 80s, these are the things you expected to see, you know? That's why it's like a time capsule. It's back when Tom Hanks still had talent and courage as a performer, man. Love it.
Tom Hanks lacking courage and ability, huh?
Yeah, he's been mellowing it in since the 90s, but in the 80s, man, he was hitting home run after home run. Money Pit, Man with One Red Shoe.
Ooh, the Money Pit. Not a raunchy comedy, still. Good example of a Hanks comedy. I mean, listen, look, nothing gets better than Tom Hanks and the Burbs, okay? That's Tom Hanks' peak right there, is the Burbs. But of your list, Benny, I think I've only seen Bachelor Party. I've not seen any of the Porky's. JT, what do you think of Benny's list, man?
Not bad. I mean, the Porky's I've not seen since I was a child. So I don't know how well they hold up, but they were they're definitely something I watched as a kid a lot. As a, you know, a kid in the 80s, especially a young boy, we went to these movies because we were promised some full frontal nudity. If you guys remember the movie Airplane, is PG.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it has full breast, nude breast. A woman just runs in front of the screen. Back in the day in the 80s, a PG movie was allowed to give you some breast. And that was a magical thing for me as a child. It happened a lot. And then PG-13 came out. And it's still, even PG-13, a great film starring John Candy. Who's Harry Crumb?
Ooh. Yes.
Yeah.
great nude scene in that film also, when he's at the spa. But these are the things, like, even in, we mentioned Howard the Duck earlier. You got duck boobs in that movie. And that was a PG, baby PG-13 back in the day. So for me, I think the ones that really stick out to me are the ones that I can revisit today, and I still really enjoy them. Revenge of the Nerds is definitely up there for me. You know, a lot of people talk about Animal House and there's like the Panty Raid scene. I always think of Revenge of the Nerds. Absolutely. Absolutely, exactly. So Revenge of the Nerds, Risky Business is another big one for me back in the, if you're going back to the 80s. But that one, you know, it's comedic, but it gets really dark and serious at times. And it has a real, you know, I think it actually it's a really well-made film. And I think the director did a great job with that film. I'm trying to think some other, you know, I want to almost talk about some movies that are, because this movie doesn't really quite feel like an 80s film to me. It feels like it has one foot in trying to be a raunchy 80s comedy, but one foot in being a little bit more serious, a little more sweet and tender at times. Have you guys seen The Girl Next Door starring Emile Hirsch?
Sure. Yeah, about the porn star that lives next door.
Exactly. That's a movie, and Timothy Olyphant plays like her manager slash pimp. That's a movie I really enjoyed and gave me a lot of vibes to Risky Business. And Alicia, I can't remember, I can't pronounce her last name, the daughter from 24, Alicia Cooper or something like that. She plays
I know who you're talking about.
I can't pronounce her last name.
Yeah.
But dude, like I had such a crush on her when 24 was on TV, and to see her in this movie is like unbelievable. The other one I would throw out is, and this one didn't really have, I don't think it had actual nudity in it, but was Weird Science. Just the premise.
Yes. Yeah.
The premise of two guys making a beautiful girl, and then they're too shy to like do anything with her. Again, John Hughes film. That's another film to me like that kind of fits these raunchy comedies, but they graduate as I got older. Like now I think of Role Models. I think of Superbad, even though they don't really I mean, Superbad definitely has a very huge sexual undertone, just young kids trying to get laid. It's just funny how time has changed. I mean, American Pie is obviously the Porky's of its generation.
Right.
And those movies are definitely, listen, those hit me when I was in high school, so they were – they were the ones, man. Those American Pie movies were the ones back in the day. I don't know. They don't quite hold up as good as they did when I first saw them. I haven't revisited them in a long time, but I still have fond memories of them. But I think it's hard for these raunchy comedies to have legs because I feel like some of them feel like they're a product of their time. And that's why I go to Revenge of the Nerds and a John Hughes film like Weird Science, because I do feel like they've stood up against the test of time. Porky's, I'm not sure about because I'd have to go back and rewatch them. I would say if I was a betting man, I might not enjoy them as much as I did back then.
They do not hold up. I did a rewatch of them like a month ago, and I hadn't watched them in 10 years. And the nostalgia, it carries me through. Like I still absolutely loved watching them. But I would say this, like if you're, you know, in your 20s or early 30s and you're watching this, like a lot of the movies that I'm mentioning to you, they're not going to hit home. Just like culturally, they're not going to connect with you. And like the themes, they don't necessarily hold up. Like to JTE's point, like raunchy comedies, a lot of times they are very grounded in the era that they are, you know, come from. And if you don't understand, you know, the culture of the time, it's very hard to relate to that, to have the jokes hit, you know. It's like I said, like if you watch a comedy from 1926, unless you're somebody that's a fan of movie history and, you know, you want to put some research into understanding what was happening at the time, they're not going to work for you. And it's the same thing with these. They're definitely anchored when they came out.
Yeah, and like Blockers is one that I think recently I thought was really enjoyable. John Cena plays one of the dads. And their daughters all have this pact where they're going to get laid on prom night. And I thought that was like a great example of something that's trying to be like one of these older 80s films, but is very well updated for kind of like today's youth and today's what we think of a raunchy film is. But Moose, I want to hear some from you. What are some films that really stand out for you growing up?
Oh, Caddyshack will always be one of my raunchy comedies. I still can throw on Caddyshack and laugh at every line that Rodney Dangerfield throws out. Hey, Wang, it's a parking lot. What are you doing taking pictures? Like, he's just one after the other. You know, I get a free bowl of soup with that hat? Like, it's just like, I could sit here and quote Caddyshack all day. And so Caddyshack is definitely still one of those like raunchy comedies that resides with me. So when I was younger, I actually couldn't watch anything. I had restrictions on what I could watch. I remember we used to sneak in The Simpsons. and like, yeah, and compared to like some of these movies that we're talking about, like that, like, this, wow, those definitely, yeah, triumph over the raunch that The Simpsons did. But as time progressed in the household, so did we. And so some of my movies are a little bit older, but Caddyshack was always a staple at the house because it was always on TNT. And we always saw the TV version, which blocked out, you know, all the sex scenes, which cut out all the cussing. And then as I got older, I finally got to experience like unrated versions of Caddyshack. I threw in Kingpin as one of my favorites in there because that's just a raunchy comedy. That used to be a movie. I still think that might be my dad's favorite movie is Kingpin.
Wow. Well, if we're talking Farley Brothers, I think we kind of got to bring up There Is Something About Mary. I think many would be considered to be one of the all-time raunchy films like ever.
For sure. I actually put that on my list as one of the raunchy comedies of all time There's Something About Mary. And then because this kind of I think these two movies right here brought back a little bit of like the raunchy comedy into a more like modern scope. The Hangover I put on there because I think we can all agree like that was the funniest movie of that year. The first one. Yeah. The second and third. Fine. Not, you're just retreading. Not as good. But that first one was so freaking funny. Still holds up. And then Bridesmaids. Nope. I love Bridesmaids. I know Benny hates Bridesmaids.
Wow, Benny, not a Bridesmaids fan.
I've never even made it through it yet. I've tried three times and I haven't made it through it.
Oh, Benny, it's so freaking good, man. Look, Melissa McCarthy, even in her misses, I still find her humorous. Like, I think Melissa McCarthy is a very talented actress, but I also think that she has got the comedy chops into her bones. And so I thoroughly enjoy Bridesmaids. I watch Bridesmaids a couple of times a year since it's come out. So those are my kind of raunchy comedies. Like I said, I of all the like 80s like raunch comedies that you guys are talking about, absolutely have I seen them. I don't gravitate towards them because I didn't see them in the 80s. I couldn't. Yeah. I didn't see them till like the late 90s.
That's interesting. So you didn't really grow up with them. So something that came to you later in life. Like, so Something About Mary, was that around a time where you were like, okay, you go see a radar movie?
Yeah. So yes, absolutely. So Dumb and Dumber was kind of the like first tread into like the Farrelly Brothers. And like, I saw Dumb and Dumber with my brother and sister in theaters, and we could not stop laughing the entire time that we were in the theater. And then Something About Mary came out like a year or two later, and it was kind of their follow-up to it. And I remember seeing it with them in the theaters too. And so, yeah, and then went and saw Kingpin. So Farrelly Brothers had like back-to-back-to-back like winners in terms of the raunchy comedy.
Irene, I mean, Jim Carrey, me, myself, and Irene, it was a big deal because it was from the guys that brought you Dumb and Dumber. They brought you Something About Mary, and you were getting a rated R Jim Carrey. So I remember that being a big deal.
So, yeah, I absolutely like in the later part, like the like 80s. No, there was if it was raunchy, we saw the TNT version or the TBS version, which was, you know, no nudity, no cussing. It was, you know, the TV censored version of it. But then as I got older, as our family kind of started to age a little bit, we were able to finally start seeing some of these more raunch comedies.
I also want to give a shout out to the two lesser films, I guess you would say, but Road Trip and Euro Trip.
Oh, sure.
Are two very, I think, underrated, raunchy kind of, you know, sex comedies. I think I actually like Euro Trip more than Road Trip, even though Road Trip was the bigger hit. I feel like Euro Trip has kind of lived on. Scotty Doesn't Know with Matt Damon, one of the best cameos in like any movie. And that movie is actually just really funny. If you guys haven't seen Euro Trip, check it out. It's got, you know, a lot of sex stuff in it, but it's actually just generally funny at times.
I definitely think you got to throw old school into that categorization too. Like old school, Road Trip, Euro Trip. Those all kind of came out around the same time.
Correct. Yeah. Wedding Crashers. That's another good one.
Sure. Oh yeah, for sure. Wedding Crashers is definitely a raunchy comedy, but I agree with you guys. I think raunchy comedies, the ones that have the legs are the ones that we're going to remember, right? I feel like there's so many attempts to recreate raunchy comedies, including the movie that we're going to be talking about in our next segment. But I definitely think that there's a lot of misses when it comes to the raunchy comedy. And a movie, and then when you finally do get that hit of a raunchy comedy that is that resonates with fans, they do something like The Hangover Part 2 or The Hangover Part 3, where it's like you try to recapture that magic and it just doesn't work.
That's also a ripoff of Porky's. They started that too.
I had a question. Benny, if you were to remake Porky's today, who would you want to direct it or maybe write it? Who would you put in charge of relaunching the Porky's franchise?
Oh, wow. That is an interesting... I don't think you can.
Untouchable. Citizen Kane.
I just don't think culturally that...
Citizen Shame.
It will go forward. Like you could make American Pie, movies like that, they all have similar themes, but I don't think you could remake Porky's with sort of its exact story beats, because culturally, I don't know another way to play it. It's very objectifying towards women. There's a lot of there are racial slurs in the movies. The movie is not going to carry forward culturally. You cannot remake that movie now. And if you remade that movie now, you would have to change so much of the comedic beats in it. It's not going to be the same movie.
So what I'm hearing from you, Benny, is that you would love Melissa McCarthy to head the new generation of Porky's movies.
But by all means, let her take a shot at it. Maybe this generation will love it. I'm not going to watch them. But hey, if it makes people laugh, great.
Well, folks, we're going to wrap this segment. We're going to move on to our next segment. Before we do that, we're going to take a commercial break. But stay tuned. It is our spoilers and our review of the new Jennifer Lawrence movie, No Hard Feelings, with the amazing Bethany Deacon. Stay tuned.
Now on video, Disney's classic, The Great Mouse Detective. Uh-huh. Olivia's father's been kidnapped. And now it's up to Basil and Toby to save the day.
Hooray!
Just released on video, Disney's The Great Mouse Detective, added to your collection.
Want some waffles?
Waffles? Are you crazy? I don't have time for waffles.
You do if they're Eggo Cinnamon Toast waffles.
Try them.
Where's the butter and syrup?
Are you crazy? You don't have time for butter and syrup.
They're the first waffles with a baked-in sweet cinnamon taste. So they're great, even without butter and syrup.
What's eating, Dad?
Waffles.
Are you crazy? You don't have time for waffles.
Eggo Cinnamon Toast Waffles. Hey, you've got time for waffles.
Welcome back, folks. And this is going to be our review and spoilers for the movie No Hard Feelings. Starring Jennifer Lawrence, and I'm going to butcher this kid's name, Andrew Barth Feldman, and Matthew Broderick. They dusted off Matthew Broderick. Ferris Bueller himself shows up in this movie, folks. We welcome into our studio the one and only Bethany Deacon. Hello, Bethany.
I felt like I should, there should be a door creaking, hello, and welcome to the studio. Hi, I'm so happy to be here with you lovely gentlemen this evening. I would be happier if we wouldn't have just gotten murdered by LSU in Game 3 of the College World Series, but I'm here. We're going to talk about a very overall silly movie, and I'm going to put baseball behind me, even if it is breaking my heart a little bit.
So the Gators didn't pull it out, huh?
We lost. We did so good yesterday. I did somehow sneak in watching this movie in between lots of college baseball this weekend. So I did my homework. I've come prepared. I'm ready to talk some J-Law. And I might just cry just a little bit because I'm still a little hurt by today's loss. But it's fine.
Well, I certainly think we all felt like crying for multiple reasons as when we were leaving this movie. Whether those were good tears, heartfelt tears, or tears that we just wasted an hour and 45 minutes of our life. But let's kick off our initial thoughts, non-spoiler thoughts about this movie. Bethany, you're our guest. We're going to have you kick us off.
Wow.
What'd you think of No Hard Feelings?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I go to the movies a lot because I have AMC A-list. Please sponsor me, just like in general life, AMC A-list, please. So I have seen this trailer a million times. And every time we have seen this trailer, we're like, meh, like maybe we'll catch it. Maybe we'll catch it when it like comes to a streaming service near you. Or I don't know. So we're kind of, I really like Jennifer Lawrence, and I know she's been kind of on a downswing recently. She's kind of disappeared, but I was like, oh, you know, I love J-Law. Like maybe, you know, this will be a good comeback. Trailer ooked me out though. The concept of parents being like, hi, we now know from watching the movies, this is a small spoiler. Sorry, I'm not supposed to be doing spoilers yet, but she is playing her age. And she's being asked to date someone that's 19. So the trailer's kind of ooked me out. When I saw the movie, without giving away any more spoilers, except for the fact that Jennifer Lawrence is playing her age, I will say better than I thought, still not in love with the overall concept of the movie, but I do think there was enough heartfelt moments in it. Oh, my biggest win, I will put a pin in that. I'm going to talk about my biggest win when we get to spoilers about this movie. It's nothing interesting, but I just want to brag about it for a minute. But yeah, I would say if I'm ranking it, you know, which I wasn't asked to do, but I'm gonna, out of 5 stars, I would give it a solid 2.5.
Middle of the road.
Yeah, kind of how I feel.
Maybe a little higher than what I would rank it, but JT, tell us your initial thoughts of this movie, man.
Yeah, I'll say this. I enjoyed the first, I'm not going to get into spoilers, but I enjoyed the first half more than I enjoyed the second half, because I think the first half really leaned into the raunchy kind of like, this is what this movie is going to try to be. We're going to push the envelope a little bit. And the whole premise of the movie is really interesting. And that's one thing when I felt when I saw the trailers, I was like, ooh, that's a funny premise. And I'm excited to see what they do with that premise. And I feel like the first half of the movie lives up to what I was expecting. And then the second half kind of doesn't live up to what I was hoping they would go with it. Or maybe they don't go as far as I think that I would like them to do. It feels like they had 1 foot in a raunchy comedy and 1 foot into like a sincere, heartfelt comedy. And I think that's a hard thing to balance. But I think all the great raunchy films are able to balance that really well. But I think the scale needs to be tilted more to the raunchy and funny, and not so much lighthearted and heartwarming. I feel like this movie was kind of 50-50, and it needs to be one of them. It needed to be a raunchier or more heartfelt and less raunchy. But because it was right in the middle, it didn't feel like it accomplished either. But it was okay. Like, it was okay. I enjoyed it. Like, just like Bethany, I have A-list. Didn't cost me anything extra. I think what saves the movie is J-Law. I think she's really good. She's really funny. I think with another actress, this would have been not as entertaining. But I think the draw of this movie is seeing Jennifer Lawrence in this kind of movie. And I think when it comes to that aspect, she really stepped up to the plate and did a great job.
How about you, Benny? What's your thoughts on No Hard Feelings, pal?
I really appreciated what they were trying to go for in the movie. Like, I loved the pacing of the movie, in the sense that one of the reasons that I really like old comedies from the 80s and things like that is because probably since the mid-2000s, when you watch a comedy, it's like joke, 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 joke. And there's never a downshift where you get something to sink in. You know, it's just always one joke after another. And these older comedies, there'll be like 5 or 10 minutes of, you know, where not something hilarious is happening. Then when something real crazy does happen, it like jars you and it's more memorable to me. So I really loved the pacing that they used in this movie. They did use like the pacing style of a movie from the mid 80s, and I really appreciated that. I'm with JTE in the fact that I think that the balance was a little bit off. I think they were missing like a few more of those big, like, oh my God, I can't believe that they just did that moments. There were a few of them in this movie, but I think they were a couple away from like really nailing it. But in the end, like, I left the movie, like, I really liked the movie, especially because of the pacing. I don't think it accomplished everything that they set out to do, but what they did accomplish, I really appreciated. And I will say this, Jennifer Lawrence did a great job, and, you know, I think this is the first time I've ever seen her try to do anything comedic, so I appreciated what she did. I think they should have made this movie with another actress, because they paid her $25 million for this movie.
Oh.
And this movie is going to lose money because she was in it, where you could have made this same movie with another, like a new actress, and this movie could have been a moneymaker, and we would get more like raunchy comedies more of this pacing. But they're going to lose money on this because of what they paid her, and I think that's unfortunate because I would like to see more movies in this genre and in this style.
I'm going to echo what all three of you guys have said, is in that the movie almost doesn't know what it wants to be. It has these huge raunch, like shock factor moments in this movie. Like, we get all of Jennifer Lawrence at some point in this movie, like all of Jennifer Lawrence. And it's probably one of the funniest scenes. But then it bounces back and forth, and some of the stuff is very predictable. Like, they hint to the kid being able to play piano, then she takes him to the bar, they see the piano, and so some of it's very paint by numbers. But also, like, I wasn't, like, at the end of it, I just wasn't sure, like, what I was to expect from this relationship between the two of them now. I don't know. I just, for me, the movie was fine. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed certain parts of it. Other parts of it, I was like, this is just creepy. Sometimes Jennifer Lawrence came off as super creepy to me, but I understand that's what she was striving for. So pay the lady the $25 million because she nailed it right on the head. It either needed to have a couple more of those big outlandish raunchy moments, or stay 100% raunchy in this world where this can't really happen, because there were moments where this movie was like grounded and it's like, oh shit, are rich parents really paying like poor Montaukans like to go like seduce their 19-year-old kids? There was some moments that were just a little weird for me. And again, I understand that that's how they were supposed to be, but they just didn't like have the same like emotional hit to me. And then at the end, it was kind of like, I don't know. I left the movie just overall kind of confused by like what the movie was trying to be. Was it trying to be serious? There have been raunchy comedies that have heartfelt moments, and some of the moments in this movie do hit. When the kid finally sits down and talks to his parents about, you know, becoming his own individual, that was actually like the only moment in the movie that I like legitimately was like, oh, that had a little bit of heart to it, because both of the parents, and Broderick was one of them, they acted that scene quite well with the kid. But the rest of like how quickly Jennifer Lawrence and this kid became friends together, just it didn't work for me. I don't know. The chemistry between the two of them didn't work, even as like as their friendship started to develop. So I'd give this like a 2 out of 5 if we were ranking this personally. I do think that the director needed to kind of pick a lane. Like, there's so many of these raunchy comedies that just do have those heartfelt moments. He just didn't execute that very well, as far as I'm concerned. Just my opinion, guys.
Well, speaking of the director, I really liked his last film, Good Boys. That's a movie that was ridiculous from beginning to end. And he wasn't trying to really have this heartfelt moment. It was just trying to be as funny as it can for about 90 minutes. And I think this film worked for me the most in the beginning, when she didn't have that relationship with him. And she was just this older lady trying to seduce this, like, this kid fresh out of high school. To me, that's when it was its funniest and most outlandish. And, you know, we'll get into spoilers later. And some of the scenes that, you know, happened because of the age difference, I thought a lot of the jokes that worked for me were the jokes on the expense of how she's an older woman, he's a younger kid. And yeah, so there are things that did work for this movie. And I do feel like I remember 20, 30 minutes in thinking, no, this could be really good. And it just didn't quite live up to it past that. So if I was going to rank it, I would give it probably 2.5. I think I'm kind of, we all seem to be around the same area. It's like half, to me, it was like half a good movie. And the ending kind of felt rushed and tacked on. It didn't feel quite as fleshed out as the premise in the beginning. So that was, the ending didn't really work for me.
What's your guys' thoughts on the ending? I mean, let's talk about that. Have you guys
full
seen
spoilers? Let's just go full spoilers.
Sure, we're gonna go full spoilers for No Hard Feelings. And listen, no hard feelings if you liked this movie, but I'm getting the sense that we're all just a little confused on if this was raunch comedy.
Yeah.
If this was heartfelt.
But I liked it.
Of age.
I think for the most part, we all kind of enjoyed our time with it. We just see the potential. The potential was there for it to be like a really great raunchy comedy. Instead, it was kind of a half-baked one, but one I, you know, still enjoyed myself when I was in the theater. But I think the problem is the potential, the premise had the potential to be really great, and it was just okay.
I personally, I've always had this, I don't know if you would call it a mantra, but in my comedies, I like to see no emotional growth. I think emotional growth is cancer to a good comedy. You want, so I feel like in this movie, if the entire movie was this creepy lady trying to sleep with this 19-year-old who is too socially awkward to want to sleep with her, I think you could have had something really special as far as a raunchy comedy goes there.
Yes.
But I think you almost made it more creepier than by having them develop this unnatural relationship. Whereas if you kept it like a, you know, they just never hooked up and she's always frustrated by this. I see what you mean. Like, that's what I would like to have seen the movie go. But as they end up in like this weird pseudo romantic relationship, it went from being outlandish to, I don't know about that.
How about you, Bethany? I mean, there were several jump out scenes, right, that just leaned so heavily into the raunch. What was your favorite?
Yeah, so I want to circle back to the ending for a second and if that worked for me or not. I guess I kind of lean toward where y'all are saying, like, it's sort of confusing what we're supposed to get out of, like, going back to what Benny was saying about, like, he likes his comedies, you know, where there's no character growth, which I don't necessarily agree with that personally. There's a lot of comedies I like where there is character growth, but I get what you're saying. Like, if we were supposed to go into this movie and be like, Jennifer Lawrence's character is just, like, a crazy, like, cougar lady, then you'd be like, oh, yeah, like, if we were supposed to not root for her, but the movie very much wants you to root for her and like she's a good person and she's just trying to save her mom's house and she's been wronged by her dad who walked out on her. And so it wants you to feel this emotional connection with her, but it is hard to root for someone who is seducing a 19-year-old for a Buick. Like,
you know, right,
like
yeah.
At the end of the day, but they wanted it to just be funny and like for us to be like, Yeah. Like, then, like, don't make her a likable person. I guess, but like, the movie wanted to have its cake and eat it too. Like, no, we want you to like both the you know the nerdy 19-year-old, but we also want you to like the you know Jennifer Lawrence who's 32 and is trying to sleep with a 19-year-old for a Buick. And I'm like, I don't know, like just whatever. And then the ending, it's kind of like they're like friends, like you know, like he taught her things and she taught him things, and they're going off on this road trip together. Like she's gonna drop him off at Princeton and she's going to California. Which, first of all, if she really did sell her house on Long Island for way under value, how is she affording California? Not to nitpick here, but where is she living in California? Because she can't afford it. I was like, she sold her house to her friends. Nah, she can't afford anywhere in California then, like not even to rent. So I don't know. She's probably gonna be homeless or like crashing at his Princeton dorm. I'm not sure. But yeah, like there was, you know, like there is some good. I think the other thing that like bothered me is like a lot of the good bits were kind of ruined in the trailers. And again, I kind of alluded earlier, like I saw this trailer so many times. And so I was really waiting for something to happen in the movie that like wasn't in the trailers. And I guess like the beach scene, like the skinny dipping scene, which is kind of alluded to in the trailer, we didn't get to fully see. And like that is pretty funny. Like she is just like this crazy naked lady who just starts like wailing on some teenagers. And it like it's funny. Like it's kind of, you know, like they're kind of shocking you. You're like, oh, J-Law's going, you know, full nudity, whatever. But like it is like it's a funny, like it's a good scene. You know, like there's a couple other bits. Like they kind of again like show this a little bit in the trailer when she like first takes him out. Like, but you know, and he gets the Long Island. But the full scene is honestly so good. Like him showing up and he's wearing like jorts and a vest, you know, and the like full yeah. suit top, and like he's never like he doesn't know what a Long Island iced tea is, and all that kind of stuff. Like there are a lot of really good funny bits, but then yeah, then there's just a lot of like lazy comedy. Like the fact that it's a male nanny. Like I'm like, what is this? 1999? Like that's not funny anymore. like really, movie we're trying to be like, oh, Jody's a guy. That's funny. And I'm like, that's like. It's not, though. Like, that was funny maybe in 1999, but I feel like comedies moved past that a little bit. So, yeah, like, there's some good bits, but I guess I kind of agree with Benny. Like, pick a lane. Like, do you want me to root for this character, or do you want me to think that she's just like this crazy cougar who like just wants money, I guess. I don't know. I was confused as to what they wanted me to feel for her.
If they had kept the movie where she was this crazy cougar who just kept trying everything she possibly could to seduce this kid, and he just kept rejecting her, I think that would have been so much more funny. That would have gone along with the like 32-year-old sleeping with a 19-year-old for a Buick. I actually feel like that would have been the much like better direction to head. But it's a star like Jennifer Lawrence. She's being paid $25 million. She's probably demanding that there's some character development for herself in this movie. Aside from being, but if she would have played that role where she was that, because it started out that way, it certainly did, right? Especially when she goes to like the animal hospital, she's wearing the skimpiest little outfit. She's getting in like the super craziest poses that she possibly can. Like, she's totally laying it on. And I think that would have been such a funnier movie if the kid just kept rejecting her because he just wasn't interested in this older woman. Like, I don't know. I think that would have been so much better. But yeah, the beach scene. Let's talk about all exposed Jennifer Lawrence beach scene here, because that for me was, I think, the funniest scene in the movie. And yes, when the kid shows up and he's wearing the shorts, but he's wearing like a suit up top, and she's like, "You're wearing shorts." He's like, "It was really hot to wear pants." I was like, "Oh my gosh, like, if I could get away with half of the times I've like had to go to work in a suit, and if I could get away with wearing shorts, I absolutely would be that one guy that would always wear shorts, but be dressed up on the top half of me." But the first date scene, the beach scene, I think that was really the funniest, like maybe 20-minute segment in the movie. What's your guys' thoughts?
I personally think the funniest part of this movie is where she crashes the high school party and she's trying to like make fun of them with tropes from the 80s and 90s. And they're like going on this anti-bullying, anti like slur campaign. And to me, I thought that was a really good way to like throw it back to a lot of those really like negative jokes from the movies from the 80s and 90s that I love, but to modernize them, to make fun of, you know, that we thought that was funny back then. I really appreciated that quite a bit. And that was my favorite scene in the movie, because I felt like if you were going to make one of those 80s comedies work now, that's the way that you have to do it. You have to have one character completely out of touch that's still making like, oh, you know, like he's making fun of these two guys for, you know, being friendly with one another. And they're like, what's wrong with that? I think that's the way that you have to do these comedies now, is if you want that 80s style, you have to play it off against what the modern ethos actually is now. So I really appreciated that scene quite a bit.
Yeah. 21 Jump Street really kind of leaned into that, where they went back to high school and it's really like the kids aren't, they're all progressive. I thought it was really funny how every kid in this movie, like when she went to that party, they had their cell phone out and they were either live streaming or Instagramming. And it's just like, put your phone out. Why am I literally being streamed by like 10 different phones? And going back to the scene at it is obviously the most outrageous scene where she comes out fully naked and beats up these kids. But I thought, while the idea is outrageous, I thought the execution could have been better. I thought it was a little bit all over the place. I thought there was some maybe different camera angles. It would have been funnier if like you were just, the camera was on the kids and they were talking and you saw her in the background running towards them. I think there was better ways to set up that joke that could have made it even more comical. Again, I didn't direct the thing, but I couldn't help but feel at the end of the scene, I was like, oh yeah, that was really outrageous because she was nude. But I don't know if it was, you know, pulled off to his potential, I guess is what I would say. So really outrageous scene. Is it the funniest? I probably wouldn't say so. I agree with Benny. I think the party scene is definitely up there. The whole first time she tries to drive him home and he maces her, I thought that was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, to Bethany's point, a lot of these things were in the trailer. So a lot of these things weren't things that were, like, new to me. I saw this in the trailer already. And this might be one of the cases where it feels like they took some of the best stuff and threw it in that trailer. And everything outside of it is still good. But I think the biggest laughs were in the trailer.
Yeah.
Also, the best bit of the beach scene, I think, honestly, was him just being like, isn't this how Jaws started? That got like the best laugh out of me. It was such a stupid throwaway line. I was like, that was the best line in that entire scene.
And, you know, I will say, Moose, I thought the kid was really good, and I thought they actually did have pretty good chemistry for the most part. Like, that relationship worked for me, and I think the reason why the ending, you know, I still think the ending is kind of messy and felt a little rushed, but I did still buy them as friends, and I thought Hugh did such a good job of being such a weird, kind of sheltered kid, and it was kind of fun to see him come out of that shell. A little bit like Weird Science. You know, those kids are literally broken out of their shell and become men by the end of that movie because Kelly LeBrock basically puts them in every situation for them to prove themselves. She doesn't quite do that for this kid, but it has a similar arc a little bit.
I would say the biggest drawback of this entire movie is that Matthew Broderick is in it. I'm just going to throw that out there.
What did Matthew Broderick ever do to Benny?
What do you got against Matthew Broderick?
He came out with Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which great is film. Benny's least favorite movie.
How do you hate Ferris Bueller?
If you watch that movie devoid of all nostalgia, it is an awful movie.
I could not disagree more. I watch it all the time. I love it. Just the scene where he sings Twist and Shout might be the most joyous, like 5 to 10 minutes of film. I love that scene when he's singing Twist and Shout. Like, it's just joyous. The whole city is dancing. I love it.
No. Dancing's immoral.
Are you guys, am I alone? Am I the only Bueller fan here?
No, I love Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I don't know. I mean, is it a perfect film? No, but I think it's a very, like, it's a very well-made film. I'm happy to watch it. That's a good end. Also, Matthew Broderick is Simba. Are you also telling me you don't like the lion thing? Like, the producers? Come on.
The only thing that I have ever enjoyed a Matthew Broderick performance is the movie Glory. Outside of that, I think he detracts from everything he is in.
Wait, Godzilla 1998? Are you telling me? Godzilla is not a masterpiece.
His connection to Sarah Jessica Parker is suspect, but I won't hold that against him.
Benny, what about Project X with Matthew Broderick? Matthew Broderick, the monkeys?
No, I don't like it.
The monkeys?
Well, Ferris Bueller's isn't like the greatest movie of all time for me. I enjoy Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I mean, Ferris is a little prick, but like the whole point of the movie. Yeah. It's one of those 80s classic movies, right? You've got The Breakfast Club, you've got Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's probably top five for sure, 80s classic comedies. I can see the scowl on Benny's face. It's too bad this is an audio only podcast, folks.
How different would this movie have been if it came out in the 80s? I think it would be way raunchier, less progressive in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah.
I guess Weird Science is similar in some ways. That's a more fantastical film. I'm trying to think of another movie that I can even compare. It's like Risky Business. I think maybe some people could make, you know, not really comparisons, but it deals with a kid in high school who sleeps with an older woman. So it borrows certain beats from these 80 films, but it does feel of its time. Yeah, a little bit.
I would say the movie that comes closest to from the 80s is Can't Buy Me Love, which isn't really raunchy, but it's a very similar premise. That movie does it better, though, because it stays in the lane. It doesn't go raunchy. It goes heartfelt, and it commits to it. But it's still a pretty similar thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that is a good point. And now the remake of Can't Buy Me Love was, I think, called Do the Right Thing. Not Do the Right Thing. It's a spaghetti movie.
That's a very different.
Totally different vibe.
Nick Cannon did the remake. And I can't remember what it's called. But it's something
he did.
Drumline? No.
It's way different.
Everyone's favorite Nick Cannon film, let's be honest.
You know, I saw a YouTube clip from recently from the 80s. You want to talk about 80s movies that doesn't age well? Soul Man? It's so bad.
Come on.
It's unbelievable. Like, yeah, I can't believe that movie exists. Go on to YouTube and just type in Soul Man clip or scene, and your jaw will hit the ground.
Is that how bad C. It is. Thomas Howell? That
was, yes, it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, okay.
Holy cow. Let me tell
you. Yeah, that's a terrible movie. Terrible movie.
You can't believe how bad it is. Like, I watched a clip online and my jaw hit the ground. It was unbelievable.
I think there's like three 80s movies, comedies that I think age like fine wine, but the top of that list is Better Off Dead.
Yeah, I love Better Off Dead. I like One Crazy Summer, but I think Better Off Dead is definitely a better film. I actually went to the Arrow Theater in LA and they showed Better Off Dead followed by One Crazy Summer. And the director came in and talked in between the films, and he wasn't really happy with One Crazy Summer because the studio had interfered so much. Mm. And he basically told us, like, Better Off Dead, that's my movie. Like, I like One Crazy Summer, but so much stuff was happening with it because the studio was trying to change my style. But I love both those movies. I love them both.
I love both.
Directed by Savage Steve Holland, right?
Yeah, yep. Steve Holland. Yeah, that's the director who came in there.
Bethany, you're like a bit younger than us. What is your feeling on like the older 80s raunchy comedies that this one takes its influence from? How do they hold up for some for you?
Not great. No, I mean, there are certain things that I'm like, well, I understand in the time that it came out. I mean, there's so many, not even movies that are like really considered that raunchy. Like if you look at like John Hughes movies, half of them have not aged very well. But then there's, I mean, in my opinion, also this is probably just because it's one of my favorite movies of all time, something like When Harry Met Sally, which is a rom-com of the 80s, but still a comedy, I think has aged super well. Like, I still watch that literally every year and multiple times a year. And I think that there's still so much truth to it and so much greatness. I was rated R. I wouldn't really say it's raunchy, but there are raunchy-ish aspects to it. Obviously, it is a little bit more on the heartfelt side because it is a rom-com. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's certain things from the 80s that you're just like, oh, wow, that didn't age entirely, which is also one of my kind of weird problems with this movie is, yes, Jennifer Lawrence is much older than this guy, and yes, there is this divide, obviously, between each generation. Like, obviously, he's Gen Z, she's a millennial, but as a millennial that is supposed to be about my age, the conversation she was having with her friends and the way she was kind of acting around him, which I understand a lot of it also was a class divide because he's like rich and helicopter parents, and like that's a totally different thing than a generational thing. Like, a class divide is this whole different thing, but the way she was acting, like, we brought up 21 Jump Street and I think that movie did it so well. Like, oh, nerds are cool in high school now, like that's such an like that, yeah, like that makes sense because comic book movies are hot now and whatever, and like they did a really good job with it, like taking that kind of 80s comedy trope and being like, let's turn it on its head, that's not what high school is like anymore. This movie did not do like it. They just made Jennifer Lawrence seems so much older than she is. And I was like, she's in her 30s, like her early 30s. She's quote unquote a younger millennial. As a fellow younger millennial, like, I'm not that out of touch with Gen Z. Like, I wouldn't go to a high school party and be surprised that they're streaming everything. Is that what I did in high school? No, because our phones are potatoes. But I like also am not that out of touch with what they're doing. And like, just the way like her and her friends, like her bartender friends talked about that generation, I was like, that's not, and again, this is very anecdotal, but I was like, that's not the way I feel like me and my friends talk about people that are that age. So I was just like, oh, like this movie felt like it was written by someone who is in Gen X and is trying to be a millennial talking about Gen Z. And I was like, that's not how we talk about them as a quote unquote younger millennial. So yeah, it's such a weird nitpicky thing, but it just didn't ring true to me. And it was something that did bother me throughout the movie. Like, just speaking of that.
No, I agree with you thoroughly that she is doing an impersonation of a character from a movie from 1983.
Yeah. Yeah.
She is not playing a millennial. She is playing a very late baby boomer, very early
right.
character.
And I'm like, you're not 32. Like, no 32-year-old. They're like, we're going to make it like she's a millennial because she can't afford to live in a house. And it's like, preach. And she, she's like driving Uber on the side for her side hustle. And I was like, okay, yeah. And then like everything else about her, you're like, no, like that doesn't ring true to like my experience or what we're going through or the way we would talk to friends about things or anything. I was like, what is this friend group? Like, they're the most Gen X baby boomers I have ever heard try to pretend to be millennials.
Does anyone can pull it up real quick? Or I guess I can. I would be curious to who wrote the movie, how old they were.
Yeah.
I would guess whoever. Yeah. Whoever wrote this movie, I would wager that they are in their late 30s.
They've got to be older.
Well, you guys give your final thoughts. I'll pull up some ages here. Okay, JT, I'm going to toss it over to you for your sure. Thoughts.
Thoughts on what exactly?
Final thoughts.
Oh, final thoughts. Okay, that's a little different.
Come on, get with the program.
Yeah, I just heard thoughts. I was like, I got thoughts. Overall, if you have a list and you got nothing else to do, it's worth a check out. But can you wait for streaming? I do think you can, because to me, when it comes to comedies and theaters, I love going opening night, so you have that communal experience of everybody laughing. When I saw this, it was a decently sized theater. It was a Friday night. But it wasn't, you know, people weren't falling over their seats laughing. Popcorn was not being thrown in the air. It was just like a lot of, you know, chuckles and giggles here and there. It's a fine movie. I think it's just right down the middle. Okay. Jennifer Lawrence, honestly, is the one who kind of makes it more interesting than I think it would have been. I think she does a great job. I think she has great comedic timing. I think, you know, her being able to, you know, swear and be raunchy, she really seemed like she was having a blast doing the role. You could tell she was fully invested. And I think that, you know, while watching the film, I really got that out of the film. I said, wow, J-Law is just having a blast. Whenever an actor is doing that, I think it really helps the film when I could tell the actor is really into it. And this was a passion project for her. Apparently she read it and she's like, I want to make this movie. And they made it within like a few months of her reading it. They greenlit it and they made it within a few months later. And it was like a pretty quick shoot. So again, a lot of the money went to J-Law. Is she worth $25 million? I don't know about that. She hasn't really had a hit movie in a while. She kind of took some time off because she had a kid, which is totally understandable. But I think this was a fun way to see, for the audience to see a different side of her and to see what she's capable of. Silver Lion Playbook, I would say she does have some comedic moments in that. She's playing a very different character, but someone who's very messed up. But she really does bring a lot of humor and kind of craziness to the role. Whereas this, she's not really crazy, but she is outrageous. And I think I would love to see her in more roles like this. I didn't like the last one she was in, Don't Look Up. I kind of hated that movie. But I didn't blame her or the actors. I just think Adam McKay went full Adam McKay, and it just didn't work for me at all. So I'm excited to see what she does next. I hope she does more things like this where she can kind of spread her filthy wings and be a little more raunchy and a little more R-rated. And I think, you know, she really saves the movie for me. And I do think the kid, the newcomer who plays, you know, the kid who's being seduced is really good too. I think they both came to play and they both had good chemistry. I think the movie just, when I read that she read the script and they made the movie a few months later, maybe they could have took some more time to get some more jokes in there. Maybe got a little bit tighter of a script, because it does feel like it falls apart a little bit by the end.
So to answer your guys' questions regarding the writer, it is written mm-hmm. by the same duo that wrote the Good Boys movie. So it is the director, Gene Stupinski, and his writing partner is John Phillips. They're both like mid-40s.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it shows.
Bethany,
I'd be so sad if you were like, they're 33, and I'd be like, damn it, my whole theory is ruined. But no, they're very much like older millennial. No, they're straight up Gen X. Yeah, I think if they're like mid-40s, or, you know, whatever, early mid-40s, I think they're Gen X. So yeah, and it shows. Okay, yeah, final thoughts. Yeah, I mean, it's summertime, you know, it's hot out there for most of the country. I will say I did enjoy the runtime. Like, I saw there was going to be an hour 43 and I was like, yes, perfect. Doesn't need to be any longer than that. That's great. It's a comedy. Let's do it. I agree. I think Jennifer Lawrence really does elevate it. It was good to see her back doing something that clearly she did care about, that I think she did a really excellent performance. I would like to see her do more comedy, hopefully a better comedy next time. But I do think there is something there. I think she does clearly have comedic chops and she seems to enjoy doing it. So hopefully we'll see more of that. But yeah, overall, it's a mixed bag. It really is. And I liked like I said, I kind of like some of the heartfelt moments, but then I was like, what are we doing here? What are we doing? So yeah, I just kind of wish they would have picked a lane. Either keep it full, raunchy, silly, dumb, you know, kind of like you guys said, like it's, you don't believe that this is a believable world, or completely steer into the skid of the other way. But yeah, I don't know. It was fine. It's hot outside. If you want to go turn off your brain for a couple of hours, if you want to go to AMC and see Nicole Kidman tell you how, you know, they make movies better, by all means. And just to circle back to my big win is my husband, as all of you know, well, most people know that my husband obviously is Mike, and hopefully most of you know that he's from Long Island. And so, again, we'd seen this preview a million times, but like, why would you know from the previews that it was set in Long Island? And so it starts, and the first thing you see is the Montauk towing truck. And I immediately go, oh, it's set in Long Island, way before he noticed it. And he was like, oh, yeah, I see the New York plates. And I go, Montauk. It said Montauk. I know that's in Long Island. And he's like, yeah, you're right. And I was like, win of the day. So I caught on that it was set in Long Island for my Long Island born and bred husband. And that alone was worth the AMC, you know, price of admission. The AMC was price of admission of seeing it for me.
Nice, Benny. Give us your final thoughts, buddy.
I'll say what this movie, I think, does do well is it gives you an echo. You know, if you are a Gen X person, it gives you echoes of the comedies that you grew up with. It doesn't succeed fully getting there. But like I, you know, like I've said multiple times on this stream, I don't know that you can make those kind of comedies now. It's just they're not going to work for anybody. And I think this was an interesting experience on trying to make a comedy from 1983 fit into the modern day world and culture. And it didn't quite succeed, but I would really like to see more attempts of it. Because I, like I said, I love the pace of this movie. I like the style of it. I just don't think that it successfully did what it set out to do. But I really hope there are more attempts at it. Because the echoes really do make me feel like warm and fuzzy, like, okay, this comedy makes sense to me.
Well, I'm not overly in love with the movie. I absolutely actually loved Jennifer Lawrence trying her hand at comedy. And I actually think she had really good comedic chops. I'd like to see her do more. I'd like to see her in like an ensemble comedy. I did very much enjoy the kid who was kind of the awkward 19-year-old. I also agree with what JTE said. I think this kid could be a next big thing. Like, he really played the awkward, weird teen, like, almost to perfection. While a lot of, like, the relationship that developed between them didn't work for me, the comedy did. I actually thought it worked quite well. And like I said, I actually would love to see more of Jennifer Lawrence in a comedic role. I don't know how many comedies are going to pay her $25 million a pop, because usually that's what a comedy's budget will probably be set at. But hey, if there's anything to take away from this experiment that is No Hard Feelings, is that Jennifer Lawrence, she's got range, man. We all knew that she could pull off the dramatic stuff. Now we know she can pull off the comedic stuff. And it's really hard, I think, sometimes for actors or actresses who are pegged into those categories of being purely a dramatic actor or actress and being able to turn around and land supremely awkward, crazy jokes like running out of the ocean completely naked and then beating the hell up out of these, you know, local Montagnians that stole your clothes. And she, to her credit, she pulled it off. Well, folks, we are going to wrap this up, but Bethany, we definitely wanted to throw out a huge thank you for being on our show, and want to turn it over to you to pitch, promote, plug. Where can people find you?
Yes. Again, thank you for having me. I'm around anytime. Hint, hint, when Barbie comes out, I'd love to come back on. I know it's so nice. Far away, but I'm sure I'm going to have thoughts and feelings. But in the meantime, you can find me on With the Show every Wednesday night, where I'm with my Long Island husband and two of our other dear friends, Justin the Juice Icon and AJ the One and Only Lancaster. We talk pop culture, silly stuff. It's basically a happy hour every Wednesday night where we just shoot the breeze with each other and try to make each other laugh and get to keep in contact with friends that live all over the country. So that's awesome. Yay, friendship. And then you can also find me wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that jazz, on my book club podcast, Hate Spinnerbait, Spinner, S-P-I-N-N-E-R-B-A-I-T, all one word. Hate is a separate word. Hate Spinnerbait, if you're a Sarah Dessen fan, which probably not, but you could be, and you would like to listen to me and my friend Mike Van talk about her books, come hang out with us. We chat, we talk books, we talk life, and it's a really good time. Episodes drop every Tuesday at approximately 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Yeah, that's about all I got. Oh, and you can also find me occasionally sucking at trivia on Benny Moose Save America, but when Mighty Ducks comes along, I'm going to be really good because I know those movies really well. Okay, thanks.
Nice. Bethany, throwing in the Benny and Moose plug at the end.
Gots to.
Thank you, Bethany, so much for being on the show. And I'm just going to say it, guys. That's a wrap. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night, America.